Will the Elf King heed what the Witcher entreats? This history are we doomed to repeat?
Nah, that's shit.
This is where we part ways, Bard. For good.
Look, I promise to change the public's tune about you.
At least allow me to try.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building and sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we will be discussing The Witcher, the epic fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we're going to talk about the major plot points in episode 2, titled 4 Marks, and give our reflections on the show and some takeaways to help you navigate this world.
You know, guys, here I go again, just delivering exposition about this podcast. But I think it's important that you know that it's going to contain adult content, much like the show The Witcher itself contains adult content. So if you don't enjoy adult content, you'll probably enjoy this podcast as much as Geralt enjoys giving reviews of music during his day drinking alone in his favorite bar. So tip your bard and control your chaos. This is episode 2.
Well, let's get into the summary. We start the episode with two teenage lovers who decide to bully a young woman who is different.
Yeah.
They're just out here kissing.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah.
Making out in the barn.
Weak flower game, though. Like, completely weak. Get shut down with those weak-ass daisies. She's like, get those daisies out of here. I wanted a rose.
Okay. Can I just say that I thought that she was being a little extra with that? I like daisies. What's wrong with daisies?
I mean, it's okay, but it doesn't, they are inexpensive. They pretty much are filler on any bouquet that you buy.
I thought they were
so
nice.
I mean, I get it. I thought they were cool too. She's a little bit evil, as we see later on. So I mean, I get it. She's not exactly the nicest person. But the flower game is a little bit subpar. We need to step up just a tad.
Whatever, she could get a daisy.
Word.
So the young woman that they're bullying is named Yennefer. She has a curve in her back and is considered to be deformed. To escape the bully, she accidentally portals to places unknown, where she meets a very, very handsome young man, Isred.
I mean, more handsome than your guy Boreal? I mean, where are we going on this? A scale of like 7 to 10?
Listen. I saw him and I was like, hey.
Oh my God. She's like, you know what? That little low fro is working for you. I get it.
It really was. Yeah. It really was. So he tells Yennefer that someone will be coming for her because the portal that she created kind of marked her. So he portals her back home. Someone does actually come for her. A woman arrives at Yennefer's farm where her father sells her for less than the price of a pig.
Worst auctioneer ever. She starts out like really, really high. She's like, oh, how much for that pig? He goes, how about 10 marks? He goes, I'll give it to you for 6. How much? And she's all like, whatever. And he goes, how much for your daughter? 4 marks. What? This guy, worst auctioneer ever. Like, really not good at negotiating.
Also, worst father ever.
Yeah, I was going to go there. Yeah, he's pretty terrible. He's pretty terrible at his dadding.
This was genuinely an awful scene. So when this woman shows up at first, when her father so quickly, I mean, this Yennefer sleeps with the pigs. Like, that, it's clear that she's not allowed in the house. And I was like, this is disgusting, but, like, her whole family hates her anyway. Maybe this will lead her to something else.
When you said that, I just had, like, I saw Marlon Brando and The Godfather, like, hey, we're going to make him sleep with the pigs. This is, I'm going to ask you for a favor. I can give you 10 marks versus 6 marks. It was exactly what came into my mind. Anyway, but that is, you know, what can you say? Yeah. This guy is terrible. He's trash. He's definitely trash.
Because Because Yennefer's mother and her siblings come out of the house and they're clearly horrified. So I was like, okay, so the whole family doesn't hate her. It's just this guy.
No, complete trash. And she was actually, if we really break that scene down, she was actually trying to feed the pigs and do some housework. And she was actually trying to do her part and contribute. And he's like pushing her down and being like, no, get out of here. Like, I don't want you to even touch anything. Like, totally trash. This guy's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, her background is pretty heartbreaking.
Yep, I agree.
So this woman takes Yennefer to a place that I can only describe as boring Hogwarts. Most boring wizarding school ever. I was just like, this place is not interesting.
They don't even sort. They're all in the same house. There's no sorting. There's no nothing. Like, what is happening here? This is not a cool magic school at all.
No. It's really not. And Yennefer is, like, devastated. In her despair, she breaks a mirror and she tries to kill herself.
That was a sad scene.
Yeah, it was. I mean, over the course of this podcast, listeners will see that I deeply, deeply feel for Yennefer all the time. She has some tough moments, but she has a really heartbreaking story.
Great. Like, as we go through it, for sure. She's just really, really, her story really stands out to me. And I agree. She's, she's a survivor, man. She's one of the great parts of this whole series, for sure.
Yeah, I was in on this show, basically, when we met her. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break from Yennefer for a while, and we go back to Cirilla, who is being hunted. She decides that she's going to try to dye her hair.
With mud.
I mean, it was smart. Yeah. But I was, I don't, actually, was it smart? I'm not really clear.
I don't know if it was smart because it doesn't really cover anything. It's just mud. She's like, it just looks like dirty blonde hair. It doesn't look like black hair now because you put mud in it. It's like not smart.
In this episode, it's pretty clear that she doesn't know the world at all. So she meets this boy who tries to help her find something to eat, and she hits him with the "I don't eat rat." Excuse me?
What? Like,
you're
first of all,
you're dyeing your hair with mud.
Oh my gosh! Yes,
girl, there's not a Sephora for you to go in and get real hair dye. You're not going to get Chick-fil-A. Like, you eat what's available to you.
Yo,
like,
but and shout out to who she dubs later as Rat Boy. But shout, and not his name, by the way. But shout out to him, like, with the great game of charades. Like, she's about to eat poisonous berries. He hits her with the rock, like, yo, don't do that. And she looks up, like, who threw that? And then he puts his hands towards his neck to gesture, like, you're going to die. And she's like, she's like, oh, I'm going to die? He's like, yeah, no. So he saves your life. You see the rat. He's like, I'm going to cook that. And you're like, oh, I don't eat rat. And he's like, okay, cool. Gives her the shrug, like, bitch, die. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, everything about Ciri in this episode, I was just like, oh, right. I had to keep being like, oh, right, she's a princess.
Yeah.
Like, I had to remind myself that. So she ends up in a camp of refugees, but notably, the boy does not follow her.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, our friend, the Witcher, Geralt, is hanging out in the tavern, you know, day drinking, which seems to be his thing.
He loves it. He couldn't leave it behind in Blaviken.
Yeah.
He had to do it again.
And he meets with a bard who is not great. Like, let's be honest. Like, the bard, I love the bard, but he's not really good at,
Are you slandering his musical talents? Are you saying that he's
people threw vegetables at him. Like,
the reviews are in. He's getting a one.
They were like 0 out of 10 stars.
Yeah.
Like, it was not a good look.
One on the Rotten Tomato list. It's done. You're good.
It was pretty rough. Yeah. So the bard sits down and talks. He realizes who Geralt is and makes a big announcement about it because, you know, that's always cool. And because he does that, the townsfolk realize that they're in the presence of a witcher. and they offer him some money to eliminate what they call a devil who's been stealing grain from them. And unfortunately for Geralt, the bard follows him. He's like, yeah, I'll take your money. I'm out of here. And the bard is like, hey, I'm coming with you. I want to be on this journey too.
Yeah.
So back to boring Hogwarts. Yennefer is struggling, like really, really struggling. It's kind of hard to see. The headmistress, whose name is Tisea, is trying to teach all of the young charges their magic, but they're mostly terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yennefer's especially bad, but they're all pretty bad. And she meets up with, my boy Isred again.
Yeah, is this when, like, I mean, like, when they're trying to move that rock and someone catches a bad one and their hand, like, shrinks up into, like, some deformed state, it was like, yo, listen, you're pretty bad at magic. I think it may be time to give this thing up. Like, this is not your calling. Maybe it's time. Actually, she gets better, obviously. We won't spoil it, but the point is, at that point, I felt bad for her. She almost lost her hand. That was wild. And it was a good...
The thing is, this is such a terrible first thing to have them do. You know, like the first thing she has them do is try to lift this rock. And then the second thing that we see her is try to read minds. And I'm just like, these are all really boring tasks. Like, they can't get excited about them. Also, she gives them.
The curriculum is terrible at boring Hogwarts. Terrible curriculum, no sorting. Boring Hogwarts is not the move. Really bad.
Right. No, seriously. This is terrible. I was like, can we get a new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher? Like, what's going
can
on
we
here?
Get a new... Yeah, we need that. They have a new one every year at Hogwarts, so I mean, it's pretty okay.
That's controversial. So meanwhile, our girl Siri is walking into the refugee camp, and she is walking in like she owns the place. As soon as I saw her, I was like, girl, can you like shrug, like look a little bit downcast? She walks in like a princess.
Blend in. Yeah. For
yeah.
Sure.
And she immediately cuts the soup line. I mean, there was a long line of people waiting to get some of this stew or soup or whatever. And she's just like, no, I'm going to cut the line. And she quickly learns that her grandmother was not loved amongst the people. Nobody cares about her grandmother. And they're all pretty mad at her, assuming because she lost the battle. And Siri runs into a family. A young man recognizes her cloak because his father made clothing for the wealthiest families in Syntra, and he sort of takes her in. She immediately bonds with his mother. Yeah, I mean, I don't... I have things to say about this family. I don't want to spend too much time on them, though, so we'll come back later.
Trash. Also trash.
Yeah, they're pretty... I mean, they're clearly part of, like, I guess the nobility, and they're not a good... Like, I wouldn't... They don't stand in as a good model. Like, they're pretty awful.
They're
so
giving me serious, like, Siri's giving me serious Sansa season one vibes, like, right now.
Yeah. She definitely seems very naive, but also just, like, really stuck. I mean, Siri is more Sansa than Arya, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes.
So, back to Geralt and the Bard. They're making their way to the location of this creature, the devil. The bard has a lot of jokes. Geralt literally doesn't laugh at any of them. He's just kind of like, why is this guy here?
No, he doesn't really laugh. He punches him in the gut and tells him, don't touch Roach. Like, this is off to a great start, this relationship. It's a real brotherhood.
And yet the bard never turns back. He just keeps following him. It's great. So they discover that this creature is actually something called a Sylvan, which is a rare creature that looks like a goat but has human features.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really, you know what, you learn a lot on this journey, and you learn a lot about all these characters in the segment we just covered. It's really, really cool. I love that the bard, first of all, the bard is like really pushing the issue of coming, because he realizes that his material, it sucks. Like, it's really bad. So he needs to tell his stories that actually line up with what he's singing about. And he realized he doesn't have good material. So what better way to get good material than to go on real adventures? So that's a real good motivation for him. But then I also like that you see here that Geralt realizes that he has a job to do as a Witcher, but he has mercy. Like, he's not trying to kill this guy when he realizes what's happening and that he's hungry and that what's going on. He just literally says, you have to leave here. And then, you know, that's just what it is. Like, he knew that that was really what this was about. It wasn't about, this guy isn't a devil. He's not some terrible creature. He understood very clearly what he needed to do. And he showed mercy at the end.
Yeah. I mean, the whole exchange with the Sylvan and the elves, I think comes up later. But it's one of the takeaways that I had from this episode is we learned a lot about the characters and how they interact with the world, but we also learned a lot of history mm-hmm. in this episode of the world that we're in, just in terms of how elves are. So first of all, they introduce elves, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they are a population that is getting smaller. We find out pretty early in the refugee camp that they're not beloved. This guy that Ciri meets up with is literally wearing elf ears around his neck. Like, it's disgusting. Like, he's killed all these elves. So we learn about that too. And then, excuse me, we do learn that Geralt not sympathizes with them, but that he has empathy for them.
Yeah.
You know, he has empathy for, I think we learned last episode that Geralt has empathy for all creatures that are different, right? Yeah. Like, everyone who's different. Like, I think you will even see that when he's encountering monsters, he also has that empathy sometimes. Like, he understands that they're not all, like, nefarious. Like, some of them are just, this is just who they are, what they are. And we see that empathy that he has for elves, which is not one that's common in this world, come across. Like, everyone else is really hostile to them, and he's one of the few characters who's not.
And that's going to pay off for him later because, like, honestly, like, you know, if he would have been aggressive and tried to kill him, you know, we'll talk about this in the next segment, but, you know, he catches a bad one before he gets captured, and he catches a bad one with getting hit in the head. And the guy, the Sylvan, you know, recognizes, hey, you know what? This guy's not totally a bad guy. He could have killed me. So, like, that mercy, that appreciation, that empathy for living things and for things of this and people who are different in this world, actually, I think will help Geralt a lot on his journey, it seems like. So it's really cool. I dig it. Meanwhile, at boring Hogwarts, Yennefer is failing, and Tasaya is treating her pretty terribly. She spends her time with Isrid when Tasaya takes the students to another trial where they must capture lightning in a bottle. At this point, Yennefer is kind of at her wit's end, and she captures it and decides to act out by trying to strike another girl with lightning. We go to another scene where Geralt and the bard have been captured by the elves. After the tussle with the Sylvan, they've been captured when they gets hit over the head, and now they're in captivity, and they're speaking to the elves who are starving and explain why they're in hiding and what the Sylvan is doing there. That is why they've been stealing food from the humans, and that the Sylvan has been helping them, and that they have nothing and have been forced out of their lands. Geralt tells them that they should go elsewhere and get strong and show the humans that they aren't what the humans believe them to be.
So let's one second with this. So in this part, we get a little bit of, it seems something happened, right? Like mm-hmm. there's, I think it's the scene where they mentioned the great cleansing.
Yeah, it is a scene with the great cleansing. And there's a scene there about the great cleansing where he talks about, they call it the Great Cleansing. I called it mass genocide. I believe he says, watching my friends die in front of my eyes, friends and loved ones die in front of my eyes. Like, I think it was something like to that nature. And it gives you context that is a little bit debatable because I've listened to what was in the show. And just by going away from the show, what I walked away feeling like is, oh, wow, the humans really did just wipe out the elves. Through a little more research, reading, speaking to some people who are book readers, what's actually true, and giving it more context, is that the elves played some part in the war as well. It wasn't like they were just victims, but they came out on the losing end of that war. And, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about what even allowed for there to be all these different populations to have a war later in the episode. But that was, yeah, definitely the Great Cleansing was mentioned here. And they talk about the fact that the elven population was being being killed in this world.
Right. And they lost all their land, too, which I think is significant.
Yeah.
That they're basically on the retreat. So I just wanted to pull that out because I think that was a piece of information that we got from this scene that has some importance to the story.
100%. I agree. 110%. So at this point, we go back to Yennefer, who runs to Istrid, who teaches her some elven magic while showing her how to create a portal. She does it pretty easily after he shows it to her, and she tells him that he's pretty shocked. He's like, "How did you do that so simply?" You know, and she tells her that her real father, which thank God she has a real father, and that dirtbag that sold her for 4 marks was not her real dad. Basically was half elf, and he died in the Great Cleansing, which is what we just spoke about when they were wiping out a bunch of elves here in this world. Istrid and Yennefer share a kiss right before they both go to their teachers, to Saya and fucking Stregobor, and betray each other.
This.
Yeah,
Stregobor, my boy Istrid is working with Stregobor. I was so disappointed.
Yeah, yeah.
This hurt me. I was genuinely upset.
At this point, I think it's appropriate that we start having, you know, a conversation about the fact that all of these dudes that you're liking in these stories, they end up being like really maniacal in the end. Something is like, what's going on here?
Okay, first of all, I just want to be really clear that they're like evil adjacent. Okay, so, Boreal is not the central villain of his Dark Materials yet. He could be, but yeah. Right now he's not. He's evil adjacent. Does he do evil things? Absolutely. But is he the central villain? No. Istrid is obviously a good guy. It just so happens that he's working with Stregobor, who I hate.
Oh my gosh.
I just don't feel like you should, you know, say that this represents evil as a thread in the men that I happen to be attracted to on these shows. I'm just saying.
I'm sorry. I feel like, you know, I maybe poked a little bit too hard. It's okay. It is what it is. You like the bad boy. The bad boy is the evil adjacent. That's my favorite. I love it. I love. Oh god. Oh man. Okay. So basically, what happens is back in Ciri's timeline, the refugee camp is now under attack, and in this process, the matriarch of the family is murdered by her elf servant. She was treating pretty badly. So it's not, should he have murdered her? No. But she was whacked to this guy from the very beginning that we saw him. I don't blame him. Anyway, Cirilla is...
Honestly, I was okay with him murdering her. I know this looks bad for me, considering I just did the whole evil adjacent thing, but I was just saying, she was so cruel to him. Also, I had a question about this, and yeah. I'm not sure that it's clear. Is he an elf, or is he like a dwarf? Like, I couldn't really just tell. I couldn't tell if he was supposed to be an elf, or he was supposed to be, I think they have dwarfs in this world.
He's a dwarf. Yeah, he's a dwarf.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right, I wasn't sure what was happening. Like, obviously, the actor is a dwarf, so fine. Like, he's a little person, so I'm okay with that, but I wasn't sure if he was supposed to be an elf or something else. They're not really clear on that, because she just says to Cirilla, he's one of the clean ones, which is disgusting that she would say that, but it was clear that he was supposed to be part of, like, a hated race.
Yeah, and I would go with best in dwarfs because there's a couple we're going to cover, we'll talk a little bit later about in the episode, but the dwarves were one of the species that kind of came into this world at a certain point. And that's one of the reasons, like, she would say that because she's saying, like, you know, they are a hated race. Like, humans, dwarves, elves, all there's a lot of friction based on the way that they were all introduced to each other through an event in this world. So that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, as I said, I'm told the way she treated him was awful. And I'm okay with him killing her, to be honest. Yeah, I wasn't upset at all.
I was trying to hedge. I was hedging a little bit, but I'm with you. I'm in on this, too. I just felt like it was, you know, it was not to go with another Game of Thrones reference, but I was, you know, sad as it was, Shay biting one at the hands of my guy Tyrion. Yeah, I was okay with that. I was okay with this one too. So it is what it is. We're just gonna take it and say she deserved the L. And at this point, Sirius mortified watching this happen because, you know, apparently she thought she was in a safe place. So freaking naive. She thought a war camp was a safe place, but she did think she was safe. And at that point, Cirilla is rescued by the same boy who manages to get her away, stop her from killing herself, and gets her away before she's captured. And in the morning, she realizes that this boy is an elf, which would explain why he didn't want to go into the camp where a dude is walking around with elf ears around his neck. And his name is not Rat Boy, as she affectionately was calling him. His name is Dara. And he speaks and explains that to her in this part of the episode.
So I kind of like the fact that it wasn't clear why Dara didn't go with her. Because I was a little bit frustrated in the beginning when he doesn't go with her, because she just like kind of runs off and she's like, come on, and he doesn't follow. I was like, all right, I don't know why this is happening. And the actor, Dara is played by a young black actor. So I was like, is there going to be like racism in this world? Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen any evidence of that. Like, why isn't he following? And there is, right? Mm-hmm. There's a different type of bias. It's not based on the color of your skin. It's based on being part of this other type of person, you mm-hmm. know, they're people too. But because I think they have some magical features and there's been this war over land, they're hated mm-hmm. and being slaughtered and also seen as dangerous. So I like the reveal that Dara was a dwarf too. And I also like that Ciri's not, she doesn't seem to have the same biases that other people from Syntra have.
Yeah.
She's not immediately disgusted by this. She's not hostile towards him. She doesn't seem to have the same biases, which shows me that her grandmother probably wasn't talking badly about elves in front of her, which is, you know, she wasn't brought up with that bias.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it's not a good look for her to balance that she just rolled into the village kind of was a surrogate to a family and never thought, gee, I wonder where the guy who saved my life and fed me a rat is. Not a good look for her. Anyway, but that's my take
on it. Yeah, I mean, as we said, she's really entitled in this episode. Like, yeah. She went with this family because she felt some kind of kinship with them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're mm-hmm. also clearly part of the elite class. And so I think she felt like, oh, these are my people, I'll be safe here. And it turned out she was not.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So in the middle of the night, Tysia summons three girls and in a ceremony turns them into eels. Yennefer witnesses this and is hiding as this is happening. And she says, you know, Yennefer, come out, and knew that she was there. And then asked Yennefer to push all the eels into the water. So basically her former classmates push them into the water. Their power is needed for the order, she lets them know. And then Geralt and the Bard survived their encounter with the elves. Thank goodness. They showed mercy on him because he showed mercy on the Sylvan. And also because, you know, they generally don't have a beef with him as the Witcher and what he is. And he's also different. But they generally just, you know, understood that, okay, you know what? He did show mercy. Let's show him mercy. And Geralt gave them all the money that he received from the townspeople, and the bard received a new lute. We need that because we need more of these amazing songs that he's going to write about all these adventures. And the episode ends with the bard singing some fake news and the Witcher realizing that he won't be rid of him anytime soon. He's letting it go. Toss a coin to your Witcher. Oh, Valley of Plenty. Oh, Valley of Plenty. And that ends the episode.
Yeah, I love the fact that the bard and the Witcher are kind of stuck with each other.
Yeah, I do too.
I also like that immediately the bard is like remixing the news. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So here's what really happened. It's funny. Like last week you mentioned Xena and the show Hercules, which I believe was called like the Legendary Journeys mm-hmm, of Hercules, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which was a huge favorite of mine when I was a kid. I loved that show. I think it was on Saturday nights at 8, and I was home like as a kid every Saturday night to watch that show. I loved it. And his little companion was Aeolus, and the bard reminds me of their dynamic reminds me of like Hercules and Aeolus at the beginning, like very like, okay, I guess I'm stuck with you.
Yeah,
yeah.
for sure.
Providing a ton of comic relief. I love the addition of the bard. We needed it because the first episode of this show was super heavy.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that there was some levity in this one.
Yeah, and I love that when he like starts singing the fake news that Geralt's like, hey, that's not how it happened. And he's all like, yeah, but you know what? That shit don't sell records that you're talking about. I gotta sell some records out here in these streets. Let's go. All right. What you're talking about, this singing like it's like it is, like no. I gotta fabricate a little bit. No, it's great. I love this too. So here we are at the end of the episode. And as we know, many of us watched this episode and we had questions. So here are a few things in a segment that we call some things you need to know about the world that we think you should know that will kind of spell out, maybe help out with some of the questions you might have had during the episode like we had when we were watching.
Okay, so I'll take the first one. So one of the things that I love about a show that includes magic is trying to explain magic and the explanation of it. And the way that Taseya explains magic in this episode is that it's about chaos and channeling chaos. That sorcerers must perform various tasks to tell if they can channel chaos and bring order to it, which is what makes them powerful. So I really liked that she explained it that way. I thought that was a great explanation. There's more to what chaos is that I don't think is quite clear, right? Like, I kind of just imagined chaos as being the way of the world, but in, you know, things are unpredictable, and to be a mage, you have to sort of figure out how to try to channel, make things more predictable, and steer things in the right way. But the way that Taseya talked about chaos is it seems more like it's a physical entity. Like she says it's everywhere. So the explanation of channeling chaos is something that you should definitely keep an eye on.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree with that. And secondarily, beyond the conflict between kingdoms, there is a deeper conflict. The elves are feared and disliked. As we saw in that exchange with Geralt and the elves. But the magical ways of the mages are learned from the elves, and the land everyone lives on was taken from the elves. So they were essentially exterminated by an event called the Great Cleansing, and it appears this event was fairly recent in the timeline of Yennefer and Geralt.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. There's a lot about elves in here. I'm not quite clear about the connection between the taking magic from the elves, because it was also mentioned that elves use different magic.
Yeah.
And also, I think we should note that they speak a different language. It's called Elder, which is what the humans use to perform magic. They speak Elder.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about that event, because I think I wonder whether we should go right into that or the other points, but I'll talk about the event that it is, and it's called, and it's mentioned by Isdred inside of the exchange that he has about Yen's parents, and she's her telling that her father was actually half elf, and so basically it's called the Conjunction of the Spheres. So there's an event called the Conjunction of the Spheres in this world, which was a cataclysm that affected the whole multiverse and occurred 1,500 years before the events in the novels. And what happened is it trapped many quote unnatural creatures in this dimension, including ghouls, grevers, and vampires. And then there were rifts that were created by this collision of the many different realms, filling this world that we are looking at now with gnomes and dwarves and hundreds of other creatures of all shapes and sizes, as well as a mystical force that came along with them to be known as chaos, or in our word, magic. Unable to manipulate the forces of magic, and with little preparation for a fight with monsters that came through the conjunction of the different realms, the gnomes, dwarves, and elves, as well as many other displaced races, such as Varin, werewolves, and halflings, and the first humans, were plunged into a strange, dangerous, and uncertain time period that would last for many generations. And it was during this time that the elves, say humans, or more specifically, the Duak and the Wazgor people, first appeared. Their own world having been destroyed, the Nordling humans settled on the continent many hundreds of years after that, this event being called the First Landing. And it can be debated whether or not the two original human civilizations were extinct by the timeline of the Nordlings arriving in the continent. But this is basically the start of why there is these definite tribal lines and divisions inside of this world that we're watching.
So that explanation came from one of the books?
That explanation actually came from, one of the books inside of, and also from one of the fan pages one of the many Reddit threads that exist in this world.
Listen, Reddit has some good stuff on this world. Okay, I mean, that's a lot. And I wonder if the show is going to, do you think the show is going to explore more of that event, or do you think that's kind of just like a past event that isn't super important to understand?
Well, I think it's wild because in the conversation that I was referencing in this episode, he mentions the Conjunction of the Spheres, and it's what led me to go do research about the Conjunction of the Spheres, because I was like, okay, we have the Great Cleansing and the Conjunction of the Spheres. How do those two things come together? And what I found is that none of this world, the reason why the Witcher even needs to be in this world, and that there's a monster hunter that's actually needed, is because of this event, the Conjunction of the Spheres, because all these people have fear of different kinds of beings that basically only would occur when all these worlds collided. Like the collision of these worlds brought humans into the world, brought dwarves into the same world as humans and elves, brought gnomes into this world. So the basic cataclysm that happened created this. And so that, I think, it's a basis for the world. So I don't think they can avoid digging deeper into why the Conjunction of the Spheres had the impact that it did, and why, and I mean, it is the reason why chaos even exists in this world. So I can't think that they can just dance around it. They may not go into as much detail as we just went through, but they have to lean into it some more for fans of the book and fans of the game and fans of this world to feel satisfied, I think.
Yeah, I didn't actually pick up on any of my, I think I'm up to 3 watches of this episode, on that when he said that. So I appreciate that you explained it, because I totally missed that. So my guess is that most of our listeners probably missed that too.
Yeah, that's why. And you know, and that's why we're here. We're like literally, and again, like, we're doing this as an exercise in learning about this world and understanding this story. because we want to understand it deeper and we're actually like the story. And it was kind of like, kind of sad to have some places where we didn't understand or were confused, and also not to be able to have this conversation with some of the people who we love, that love sci-fi and fantasy, and that we talk about all these things with, because they've kind of maybe were turned off because it was too confusing. So if you have information and you're a longtime fan, again, don't hesitate to hit us up and let us know if there's something that we could explore even more topic-wise and things you need to know.
Yeah, definitely. So we just have a couple more things that should be noted. One is that I think Taseya mentions to Yennefer that mages or sorcerers or wizards, they go by all three names, also are sent to advise kings. And so she's explaining to Yennefer that this is one of the reasons that she has to learn to control her emotions. And what turns out to be kind of like a moving exchange between them, because she says, you know, there are witches, like I think the girl's name is Sabrina, who are able to control their emotions. And then there's mages like us who struggle with that. And the only way that I can send you off to advise a king is if I'm sure that you won't let your emotions take over. So I think that's a sort of a new piece of information, that they have a formal role, which is to advise royalty.
Yep. Every king gets a wizard. That's right. Every king gets a wizard. So that's cool. And I guess the last thing that is good to know or ponder is that the Nilfgaardians really seem to be after Cirilla. And in a world where wizards seem to be pretty normal, as we just talked about, they're pretty much, you know, there, and witches and other types of, magical beings are very normal. You have to ask the question, why are they zeroed in on this person? Like, why is Cirilla so important to them? So it is something to keep an eye on, I think, as we progress into the other episodes and possibly even to the next season. What is the importance of her that makes it so important for them to capture her?
Yeah, I wondered that right away. Like, there's literally like a wizard everywhere. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
We've met like a whole school full of wizards, and we also, you know of the two. Okay, so those are like younger wizards, but like, there's also Stregobor and Taseya and Mousak. We've already met three, and yet they're after this little girl. So I think that that's something that I'm very, very curious about. Like, what makes her so special?
Well, I have the answer. I already know. It's that none of those other wizards have that whisper tone octave range that will split the earth. Not even Mariah Carey or Ariana Grande can get
okay,
down like
let's
that.
Let's not do this.
All right.
Let's not do the artsy.
Listen.
I don't.
Siri is out
again,
here. Top
don't
pop
at me.
She is out here. Like, she is like out here with her the number one hit in the streets. I split the earth just by singing. All right. That's it. That's it. She is not here for these games. Top five in the charts. Man, so let's talk about what we love, what we want to see more of, and what we question.
Okay, so I think I said this already many times. I love the introduction of the bard. He's great. He's funny.
Awesome.
I think he brings out a side of Geralt that we don't really get to see, which is a side that, like, is kind of exasperated, but, like, he doesn't dislike this guy. Like, he saved his life, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't want him to get hurt, but he also doesn't want a traveling gift companion. But maybe this is what he needs. Maybe
yeah.
He needs a friend, even though he doesn't know that he wants one. Like, he needs one. So I really like the addition of the bard.
Yeah, people skills very lacking by Geralt of Rivia. They don't have, you know, they don't have classes for that. The bard's gonna bring him out of his shell. I agree. I think one of my favorite parts of this is the part in the bar where we first see the bard. And I struggled at first. I was like, why is he singing? And then he goes into the whole thing to something about getting an abortion. And then one of the guys goes, abort yourself. And I was like, oh, this is right where we need to be. I needed that laugh. It was
also, Did you catch that when they threw the food at him, he picked up the food and put it in his pocket?
Yeah, I did. I did.
I was like, this is great.
Oh, it's so good.
This is part of his strategy. He's like, I'm not going to make any money off my record deal, but I'm going to get fat.
Sing bad enough to get foods thrown at me that I can eat. I like it. I like it. It's a good strategy. And I guess, you know, I'll go into like what I want to see more of. I want to see more of the information of the backstory around, you know, again, like I wanted to see last week about, well, what makes the Witcher the Witcher? I really want to know more about the conjunction of the spheres, and I want to know more about the Great Cleansing. I want to understand how deep they're going to go into this and what the importance of it is. Like, because they're doing something that I actually like in shows, is that they're trusting you as an audience that if you're interested in the world, you'll do the research necessary, or you'll actually, like, you know, stick in until they can show it and reveal it to you. But I think they have to make it a little easier in season two for us as an audience that doesn't know this world to keep going. But it has, if nothing else, it has really, really prompted me to dig into like some reading and looking up stuff and understanding more things than what I probably would have. And I like that. I mean, when I first saw Game of Thrones, I didn't know anything about, you know, Westeros. And then I read practically everything I can get my hands on other than Fire and Blood. So, that's coming soon. So I think that it's great when you can intrigue an audience to want to do that. So I want to see more of the world's creation and what caused these very distinct lines, battle lines to be drawn.
Yeah, I mean, what I would like to see more of is along the same lines. I'm just still kind of confused about the timeline. So the Great Cleansing seems like it was pretty recent in the storylines of Yennefer and Geralt. So, but the same elf that Geralt and the bard come across is also mentioned in Ciri's timeline. And so I just kind of, and I know that like magical beings tend to live longer lives. It's clear that Yennefer and Geralt are not aging at the same rate as a normal human. But I would still just like to understand the history of the world. And I did look at the timeline that Netflix released, and there's still a lot of question marks. So my guess is that they're going to fill in a lot of that timeline later. But I need more. Like I get a little bit, and this is a personality quirk of my own, I get a little bit anal retentive about the timing in stories, and so this is sticking with me. Like, I just want to know when things are happening. I'm a Slytherin, but I have some Ravenclaw tendencies. So. Yeah,
you know, nothing wrong with that. At least you don't go to boring Hogwarts. It's okay.
I know, so sad.
Is the food better at boring Hogwarts than regular Hogwarts?
The food at regular Hogwarts was good.
That's what I'm saying. So there's nothing about this.
No, these people definitely don't have better food. Like, just looking at them. Like, no, no way. Everyone looks hungry. They're not eating that food. No.
Oh my gosh, man. This is bad. This is just bad. Like, and your only consolation prize is you get to be the King Whisperer. That's it. Okay. Cool. Seems legit.
Again, which seems like a pretty boring job. I mean, I guess if you're into politics. Anyway.
So I mean,
what do you have questions about?
Yeah, I have questions. I have a lot of questions, actually. So I'm trying to like kind of boil it down into one thing. But I do have questions about what you were speaking about earlier. If we're going at these multiple storylines, why is it that people who aren't technically magical beings don't change in age? Like, there's no age change. There's no, like, there's nothing that kind of like clearly delineates, okay, this is a different time. And I like that they're not doing, like, I like that they were bold enough to not do, like, you know, 3 years earlier or 2 years in the future. I don't always love that in stories because I feel like, you know, that's like this sort of like a crutch. But I do want to see, like, you have paid attention to that kind of detail where maybe Roach is, like, older And maybe the bard has a couple of gray hairs. You know what I mean? Like, as we progress through the story, we'll talk more about it. But I think, like, that's something they could pay a little bit closer attention to.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this was, I think I said last week, some of this is, like, intentional to tell the story, but some of it is just they're trying to have you be shocked.
Yeah.
And I don't like that aspect of it. Like, there's a lot of times when the plot, like, the timelines converge in future episodes. I think as we said last week, it's like 3 and 4,
mm-hmm.
where I think they were really just going for twist, and it's not always effective. I don't feel strongly about having told the story this way. I think we're okay so far, but I think it gets a little irritating and tiring at times. And it makes the show a little bit more confusing than I think is necessary. My big question about this episode and the thing that I questioned in terms of the storytelling was just, like, having these three stories play out the way that they did. They're not connected at all, right? Like, at this point, there's no connection between Yennefer and Geralt, and there's no connection between Ciri and Yennefer, and there's a loose connection between Geralt and Ciri because she was told to go look for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I like that they included all three of, like, did we need Ciri's timeline in this?
I think so.
I think in this episode, I feel like there was some exposition that wouldn't have happened. But they could have done it another way. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I need to see her as much.
Yeah, the only reason I say I think so is exactly what you're talking about. Is that you know, really showing that there is a real tension between humans and elves in this world was done primarily through Ciri's timeline, and then hammered home in the interaction between, you know, Geralt and the elves. The reason why I say it is because, like, you know, her guide that's saving her life right now, Dara, he is an elf. And then you see this boy that she runs into that is also, like, killing elves. And you get the whole context of, like, what it is. And I also think we needed her storyline to understand that the people of this world in her kingdom, which she felt safe, didn't necessarily look at her family as heroic or as people that they loved. They followed because they were maybe afraid of her might, but they weren't. Now with her being gone and them being on their own, they don't particularly love that family. And you get the context that the kingdom, her eyes, the scales are coming from her eyes for her to be able to, like, see that, like, that her world is not what she thinks it is. And so that part probably could have been lifted and put someplace else. But I think the elf part was pretty significant, and I enjoyed that part, but probably I don't disagree with you. You could do it a lot of ways, you know? So
yeah, I think you're right. Like, it is, I'm thinking about it now that it's important to, since we know that she's living at a different time, it's important to know that the conflict with the elves doesn't die down.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I felt a little scattered in this episode because it was like, and then because we kept flashing between all three storylines, Yennefer's seems kind of rushed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just seems like she went from being, like, miserable, from being a character that we're just introduced to miserable at this new school, to having a love interest, to making peace with the headmistress, headmistress is not at all her title. I'm just calling her that. But I just thought that it felt like Yennefer's story was told at kind of a breakneck speed, which is okay because she's probably the character with the most backstory of the three of them. And they can't draw that out super long, but I don't know. I didn't love cutting between all three. But that's kind of like a nitpicky small thing because I really think that this show picks up more in the next two episodes.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. Well, cool. Well, we're at the end of episode 2 of Kin Folklore The Witcher, and we hope that you're enjoying this conversation. And please feel free to reach out to us in one of the many ways you can now on our Facebook page. You can also go ahead and hit us up on Twitter at Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter. And you can also reach out to us through kinfolklore@gmail.com. We have some other things coming up. We may be putting up things, some content for you guys to read and things like that pretty soon. So yeah, please, we want to engage with you guys, not only through listening to the pod, but also in the community that we're building of people and friends that love to listen to this show.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming along with us. We will see you next week.
See you next time.